Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, July 17th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Ward 3 Pullman City Council candidates discuss stability in city government and homeless support programs at Candidates Forum. Chaz COO Sarah Doxy killed by hit and run in Spokane, and judge removes gag order in Koberger case. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Fourth District Judge Stephen Hippler in Boise today removed the court's order that prevented people involved in the Koberger murder case to discuss the case with media and others. The removal of the gag order comes just over 2 weeks after Brian Koberger pled guilty to four stabbing murders in Moscow, which occurred in November 2022. Referring to the July 2nd plea hearing where Koberger pled guilty, Judge Hippler said, "Frankly, the court was prepared at the time the plea was entered to lift the non-dissemination order. Then both sides objected. I agreed to continue the non-dissemination order." An earlier judge in the case placed the gag order on investigators, witnesses, and others involved in the case shortly after police in Pennsylvania arrested Koberger December 30, 2022, and authorities brought him to Moscow to face trial. Three of the four victims, 21-year-old Kaylee Gonsalves, 21-year-old Madison Mogan, and 20-year-old Zena Kernodal, were housemates on King Road in Moscow, and a fourth victim, 20-year-old Ethan Chapin, was staying overnight in the house the night of the murders. Two other housemates were unharmed. Koberger's motives in the killings remains a mystery despite his confession, and lifting the gag order on investigators may shed light on why he killed that night. One of the daughters of the man who police arrested and charged with a killing spree in southern Idaho last week that left four people dead said she warned police of her father's mental health crisis years before he allegedly committed the four gun murders on Tuesday of last week. Benjamin Naylor's daughter, Kayla Maker, told Boise television station KTVB in a phone interview she asked law enforcement to take away Naylor's weapons years ago, something that might have prevented the killings. Makar said police officers refused even after Naylor displayed erratic behavior, such as entering Minidoka Memorial Hospital claiming there were bugs on him. She said Rupert police officers told her each time they cannot take Naylor's guns unless they determine he was a danger to himself or others. McCarr said they should have seen clear signs of delusion and instead nothing was done. Benjamin Naylor is charged with killing 62-year-old Donna Jenks, 66-year-old Kelly Jenks, both of Burley, 35-year-old Angelica Medina of Rupert, and 77-year-old Dennis Mix at three locations in three southern Idaho communities. Police found Jenks and Medina dead in their homes, and Mix was dead in a pickup truck parked behind the closed Hub Plaza gas station in Heyburn. A hit-and-run driver has killed Community Health Association of Spokane Chief Operating Officer Sarah Doxy. Doxy was hit while jogging near the Manito Country Club on the South Hill in Spokane yesterday morning. Chaz issued a statement which said, "Chaz Health is shocked and grieving the tragic passing of our Chief Operating Officer Sarah Doxy. Kindness and professional contributions will be greatly missed." Police have arrested a 17-year-old who they say was driving the SUV at 5:30 a.m. near Perry Street and 49th Avenue that hit Doxy. Spokane police arrested Keegan Forshey after he fled the scene on foot. He faces charges of assault, hit and run, and driving under the influence at an initial court hearing this afternoon. Doxey had previously served as operations vice president at Chaz, and before that she worked at Providence Healthcare for 10 years. Providence released a statement which said, throughout her 10 years with Providence, Sarah was the embodiment of a servant leader. Her innovative contributions and commitment to excellence played an instrumental role in shaping the success of our pediatrics department. Sarah's spirit and dedication will continue to resonate throughout our ministry for years to come. 3 out of 8 candidates for a Ward 1 Pullman City Council seat were on hand for a Pullman League of Women Voters City Council Candidates Forum at Neal Public Library last night. Voters in Ward 3, which is mainly the southern part of the city, will vote for one candidate in the August 5th primary, and the top two vote-getters will advance to the November general election. The three candidates who answered questions at the forum at Neal Public Library were Shay Ortega, Tawny Zumlas, and John Castleman. The other candidates on the ballot for Ward 3 are Carl Olson, Frederico Bartolo, Michelle Dandy Utsman, John Castleman, Colin Bannister, and Dave Gibney. Olson and Gibney sent messages for the moderator to read, indicating they are still considering themselves in the race. The moderator asked Ortega, Zumlas, and Castleman if they were concerned about the lack of stability in the city. The question comes at a time when city supervisor Mike Urban left city government, with the city claiming he resigned and Urban claiming the city wrongfully fired him. This week, Pullman Fire Chief Brett Nash resigned for unknown reasons 5 months after the city hired him away from the Henderson, Nevada Fire Department. Here's the answers to the question about stability, first from Shay Ortega, followed by Tawny Zumlas, and then John Castleman.
I am concerned about our lack of stability. To be really honest, the city council meetings that I have attended, a lot of the times we're talking about economic growth. And personally, as someone who has lived a long time without a stable financial setup just because of my background, which was very marginalized and minoritized, I'm frustrated hearing that people are talking about economic growth without embracing stability first. I really think that there's a lot of work to be done in making Pullman a welcoming place, both economically and socially, and we're far from it. So we need to focus on what we've got here in front of us now before we start looking at growth. And that's very unfortunate to hear. I feel like I just met him. And Fire Brigade is one of the most valuable resources that any community can have. So,
Tawny?
All right. Well, I think that Pullman's need to grow and revitalize and to make changes is butting up against the fact that Pullman hates to make changes. And this is going to cause instability and cognitive dissonance, and it's going to cause problems. But quite frankly, that's why this race has become so big, is because it's time for Pullman to make changes, and it's time for Pullman to embrace that. There's a lot of people up here with a lot of really great ideas because of that. And I think that getting Pullman ready to change and to embrace its bigger changes is going to help with the lack of stability, because I just think that's what it is. It's just those two things butting up against each other.
John?
Yeah, I think that was really well said, Tawny, but I'll say that people rarely leave a situation that they're really happy with, right? You don't leave a good thing. That said, sometimes people do leave for, you know, life reasons, you know, spouse gets a job somewhere else. So I am very much interested in why this seems to be happening. Why is it clustered? Is there something else going on that citizens aren't aware of? And that's where I think transparency is key. So when we're seeing these departures, it's important that the city is being honest about that and sharing what they can share, right? Sometimes you can't share things, whether that's due to legalities or, let's say, a person who's leaving is not going to be fully honest about why they've left because they're afraid that might affect their opportunity to get a job somewhere else. So I think what's incumbent on the city is to communicate to the degree they can what's happening, why it's happening, what it means for the city. And I will commit to getting to root cause here. I think utilizing the data we can, seeing those stories. One thing that comes to mind, Mitzi Montoya, this is WSU, not City of Pullman, but that was one of the first times we got to see what Tawny was saying play out, right? Somebody wanting to make change, but then and asking for change, but then not letting them make the change that they're wanting to.
That was Ward 3 Pullman City Council candidate John Castleman, preceded by Tony Zumlas, and we started the clip with Shay Ortega. The three were participating in the Pullman League of Women Voters Candidates Forum for Ward 3 City Council candidates last night. There was also a question about homeless services in Pullman. Here's the moderator, followed by Tony Zumlas, then John Castleman, followed by Shay Ortega.
As a city, as a council member, would you support the expansion of the homeless support programs in Pullman? And follow-up question, would you support a dedicated homeless shelter beyond just crisis and transitional housing?
This is another easy one to answer as a bar owner. I have had to call the EMTs or the police so many times late at night because people come into my place looking for warmth or looking for shelter. I don't think the Pullman has done a particularly fantastic job of taking care of people who are in crisis or who are homeless. I absolutely think the Pullman can and should do better in that space.
John?
I have not yet explored kind of all the costs associated with developing a dedicated homeless shelter. I know that the city had tried a temporary one and tried to staff it with volunteers, and that it was pretty short-lived. Folks weren't able to commit to that on a regular basis. So I think if we're going to do that, that's going to entail significant costs. My approach to my role as a city council member is often going to be coming back to how can we empower citizens to do that work. I think about the Community Action Center. I think, again, I mentioned the Palouse Alliance earlier. How do we get people, how do we get the community members who are already doing the work, how do we empower them to do more of it, to better understand underlying causes and respond rapidly when things change? With the federal government or the state government, things that are outside of our control. So, absolutely, I think we need to help the most vulnerable among us first. I think that's incumbent upon us as Pullmanites. We are a welcoming city. We are a city where a lot of people come and go. And so for those of us who are here, who are planted, it's on us to support, again, those who are less fortunate. Thank you.
Shay.
I just want to say that many of us, as I said earlier, 75% of us are renters. Many of us are two paychecks away from homelessness. And I've encountered that myself as a single mother. And I 100% support the expansion of a home of our homeless support and a shelter. As a student who was working in basic needs over at WSU, we have a lot more transient students than you think. And we hardly see any of them. Why is that? So we have strong nonprofits in the community who are already doing the hard work. ATVP has been extremely valuable. They work directly with our law enforcement officials, the Center for Civic Engagement, the Community Action Center, WSU's Basic Needs Department. All of these individuals are so short on resources and involvement. We can do better as a city. I have seen what happens when a small rural community falls into disrepair because big investors choose to pull out suddenly when the resource is depleted. We are not far off from that as a rural community. Every rural community is. So let's do better and be preventative about it and address it now.
That was Ward 3 Pullman City Council candidate Shay Ortega, preceded by John Castleman. And we started with Tony Zumlas answering a question from the moderator. Whitman County election officials are expected to mail out ballots for the August 5th primary tomorrow. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox contributed to this story. You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tie-dye-everything.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Ungadunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Ungadunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers. at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
And we have reports from NC Web from this morning on three fires in the region. The Cherry Fire, 1 mile northeast of Deary, is currently 113 acres with 0% containment. The NC Web report on the fire says this new acreage calculation is based off an infrared flight yesterday evening that detected additional areas of heat as previously unburned fuels burned. The fire line and perimeter overall have not changed. Crews will be working to contain small spot fires on the north side of the fire that were detected via infrared and likely caused by wind-blown embers. No structures are currently threatened. The fire is burning primarily in heavy logging slash within an active state endowment timber sale and a small portion of the Nez Perce Clearwater National Forest. Sawyers removed snags adjacent to fire line yesterday to mitigate that hazard. All fire line has now been plumbed, meaning hoses and water pumps are in place to assist with mop-up. Crews will be mopping up by extinguishing burning material to reinforce the fire line ahead of forecasted winds. Weather will continue to challenge fire crews with erratic winds through tomorrow and increasing daytime temperatures. Heavy equipment and aviation resources are available if needed, although the tremendous progress has been made on the fire. Suppressing the Cherry Fire, containment is only achieved once the dozer and hand line have been tested by weather and proven to stop fire. Fire managers are asking the public to adhere to all posted road closures in the area. There's also an NC Web report on the Hope Fire near Kettle Falls. The fire north of Kettle Falls includes road closures and evacuations. It's 20% contained as of this morning, having burned 7,414 acres next to the Columbia River. The fire started on July 8th. The cause of the fire is currently under investigation. It's located 15 miles north of Kettle Falls. All fuels on and adjacent to the Hope Fire are well ahead of seasonal curing and at or above the 90th percentile. High probability of ignition and rapid growth across all fuel models at the current elevation. Upper elevations of the fire estimated around 3,200 feet still contain green components in the forbs and brush and burning in a spotty manner through woody fuels. The fire is burning in timber, including litter and understory, brush, and short grass. The Western Pines Fire, north of Davenport, also near the Columbia River, was 60% contained and had burned 5,781 acres as of this morning. The NC Web report on that fire said yesterday on all the divisions of the fire, crews were engaged in gridding, which is lining crews inward from the fire line to search for burning pockets of material and extinguishing them, and evaluated internal lines for future rehabilitation. Areas are being identified for hose lays in areas with greater density of burning material to help crews work more quickly in extinguishing and securing those areas. You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Environmental groups say Oregon's new groundwater law meant to curb pollution has been diluted to the point they can no longer support it. Industrial agriculture has contaminated parts of eastern Oregon's groundwater with nitrates from fertilizers and manure, putting residents, many of whom rely on wells for drinking water, at risk. Caleb Lay of Oregon Rural Action says earlier bill versions would have protected residents and held polluters accountable.
Unfortunately, as the legislative session went on, we saw industry groups and big ag groups get more and more heavily involved, and We really saw the governor concede many of the really important points in this bill.
Nitrates are increasingly linked to cancer, miscarriages, and birth defects. Governor Tina Kotek says the new bill gives state agencies more authority to intervene in Oregon's contaminated groundwater areas. Boardman resident Jim Klipfel moved to the area 6 years ago and discovered his well was contaminated with nitrates after a neighbor warned him not to drink from the hose. Now he relies on delivered water as a officials work on connecting residents to city water. He says there are more stories of illness in the community than average.
Scientifically, yes, I know this can't be 100% tied to the nitrates, but it's a pretty huge freaking coincidence. People getting cancer, people having miscarriages, people losing farm animals, horses, cows.
A 39-page amendment removed key pollution control measures, Lay says, including a mandate for agencies to review and tighten groundwater pollution permits. He argues the industry has too much influence over the law.
We need to shift that power back where it belongs, and that is to the people who are on the front lines of their pollution. It's to the rural, working-class, low-income residents.
A report from January shows that nitrate levels continue to rise across the Lower Umatilla Basin Groundwater Management Area in Moro and Umatilla County. About 40% of tested wells exceeded safe drinking water limits. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, mostly clear through tomorrow. Low 55 tonight, west winds 5 to 10, becoming light and variable in the evening. High 90 tomorrow, light and variable wind becoming west 10 to 15 in the morning, gusts up to 25. Friday night, a chance of sprinkles, mostly cloudy, low 58. West winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 25. Sunny Saturday, high 81. West winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 25. Partly cloudy Saturday night, low 51. West winds 10 to 15, becoming light after midnight, gusts up to 20. And mostly sunny on Sunday, high 80. Currently 84 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Coming up next, we have Planet Nancy commentary, followed by Flashpoints, the Daily Investigative News Magazine, 6:30 to 7:30. At 7:30, we have Appearing Locally, where we'll feature music from artists that are appearing in the Moscow Pullman area in the near future. And at 8 o'clock, we're going to try a new show out called First Wave, and Benjamin Bites is moving to the 9 to 11 slot on Thursdays after Oscar left us and moved away. At 11 o'clock, recorded jam band concerts with The Ride till 1 a.m. Stay tuned. Entertainment, information, and music throughout your evening here at KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tie-dye-everything.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Unga Dunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Hunga Dunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram.